This is class number 9, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Kartik 2009. Yesterday we were discussing about Phagu Vairagya, Phagu, which means false or unbalanced renunciation. And Jiva Goswami in his commentary mentioned two points that we have to consider in relation to Nirmalya, Krishna Nirmalya, are objects which are offered to Krishna, which we call generically Mahaprasad. Mahaprasad foodstuffs, Mahaprasad garlands, Mahaprasad oil or scent, Mahaprasad clothing, any type of object which is offered to the Lord and then returned to us or given to us as a gift or as mercy from a pujari or by the arrangement of the Lord. Jiva Goswami says there's two things we have to be careful of that can be considered offenses. One is not to ask for these objects when you meet a saintly person or visit a temple, not to ask for Mahaprasadam, that can be one offense. Another offense is to, when offered Mahaprasadam, then one declines to accept it, refuses to accept it, because of some prior bratta or some vairagya, some sense of detachment, not wanting to break his own vow, and seeing that this Mahaprasad, ladu sweet, well, this is sugar, I'm fasting from sugar, I can't take this, I can't accept it. So after class we discussed this principle of acceptance, which we didn't record, so we could discuss briefly. What does it mean to accept, and how do we prevent from committing an offense? So we can save our devotion, preserve our, you know, this is because he says that devotees have to watch this. To not ask to, secondly is to refuse to accept when such spiritual items are given to one by a devotee. And this is the worst of the two offenses, according to scripture. So then the question came up after class, is, well, what does it mean to accept? Because there is a principle called hela, avagya, or anadar. Anadar, adar means to respect, and hela means to neglect, and anadar means to disrespect or neglect. And hela is the same thing, hela nam, neglectfully chanting. So we don't want to neglect this Mahaprasad if it comes our way, especially we don't pay for it or steal it, which sometimes devotees do. Steal Mahaprasadam. And how do we accept it? So there's different ways to accept it. For example, one is that when someone presents Mahaprasadam, you bow your head, fold your hands, and within your heart you're very grateful and very appreciative that Krishna is coming to you in this form of Mahagarland or Mahasweet. And then you can accept it by that way first, mentally and mentally accepting it, then physically you can touch with your hand, you can touch with your right hand, touch the Mahaprasadam, then touch your head. That's one way of accepting it, mentally and heartily accepting it, and then physically by touching it, reverentially and lovingly touch the Mahaprasadam, touch your head, and fold your hands and say, thank you, maybe next time, if you're really, really super strict. Or you can say, oh, just Torasab, which means a little bit. Or you can say, so then, and the person who's distributing the Mahaprasadam, he will understand that you're some kind of Falahara Baba. You're only eating fruits. You're a Falahari Baba. And you're not eating grains or whatever. And taking this Ladu, Basin Ladu, Mahaprasad, you may think it's a breaking of your vow, so he respects that. So then you say, just give me the Tulsi leaf. So he gives you can accept the Tulsi leaf. Or you can even accept a little bit. And he'll understand, so he'll break off a tiny bit and just give you a morsel or a drop or whatever. And your hand, and you can take that and thank the person, pujari, devotee, who gave you that. Or you can say, wow, great, Anyor, Anyor, Anyor. This is nice. You know, gave me this one, this kheer from Radharaman. Do you have any more? And you can take with full enthusiasm and collect some more for later. In the true spirit of devotion or enjoyment, either one. You can take, or at least you can take one. He's offering a ladu. You can take it. You accept it. And then there's another way is you can say, oh, do you have polythene? That's what they mean. In India, polythene means plastic bag. Or taili. What do they say, taili? You can say taili. And they'll understand that some people like to carry it for later, or they're fasting until 12 and they don't eat anything before 12. Or they can't eat anything until they've gone home and done their Shalagram or Thakurji Puja. And they're on Govardhan Parikrama, it's 5 a.m. at Haridev Mandir. And they give you some ladu. And so you say taili, or you have a bag, and they'll understand, oh, yes, yes. And usually they have some. And they'll put it in a bag, and then you keep it in your pocket. The main thing is to accept it. For example, now here's an interesting thing. You go in Radharaman Temple, or you go somewhere, and you offer some nice donation, or you do kirtan, or somehow Krishna's pleased, and the pujari gets inspired and decides to give you the Maha Tambul, the Maha Betel Nut of the deity. And this is a rare thing, because the Betel Nut is not offered very much to the deities, especially in some temples, not at all. It's costly and time-consuming to make, and it's not part of the regulation and offering. But even those temples, those very ancient, let's say strict, or let's say pukka puja temples where they offer this tambul, they only offer a couple times a day. Although Krishna, when you read the Astakaliya Shastras, he's popping tambul all the time, 20, 30 in a day, and he's on Julan Yatra, and every time he swings back, goes back, he gets one and goes out, and he's quite fond of it. But in terms of, the Mahaprasad may be given to us from Radharaman or Natchi or these ancient deities, Banki Bihari, Bajari, may give us the Maha Betel Nut of the Lord or the Tambul. So now this principle says that it can be an offense if we refuse to accept Mahaprasad when it's offered. So how to deal with it? So we're saying, so the basic thing is to accept whatever is offered to you, and then deal with it later, according to your own niyam or your own principle or the order of your guru. And one should understand that if the pujari gives us this tambul, that it's coming directly from Krishna. Everything is, but especially it's special because there's so many ladus. For example, in Radharaman, they make these little clay cups of kheer, and hundreds of it for distribution to the visitors who give a donation. Usually you give 5 rupees, you get 1 or 10. Or I think rate goes up as the years go on. You see 5 for 1 now, I think it's 10 or 20 for 1. And they have a lot of that. But tambul, they have a couple pieces. And usually, most of the time, the pujaris eat it themselves. That they don't distribute. If you receive such tambul betel nut from the temple, this is a direct, you can say, embrace, handshake, pat on the back from the Lord, that I like you, that there's something, I don't know what it is, because we think, well, what is it you like in me? I don't know. Well, Sam, I did something somewhere, somehow, to somebody, and maybe even you, and you're happy, so you're giving me this very, very, what's called Priya Bhog, my very, very dear and favorite thing. Just like each of us as individuals, we have our favorite thing. And some devotee says, oh, you have any food or anything lying around? Yeah, take this, take that. Well, how about this? Oh, like maybe you like honey or something or whatever. And maybe it's Chaturmasya, so you're fasting from honey. And you say, okay, you take, you know, take some honey. But then after Chaturmasya, you say, hey, forget it. I'm eating all this honey or whatever. I don't know, whatever you're... Of course, that's not very devotional and very surrendered, but everyone has their limitations, at least in the conditional state, how far they can go and how far they want to go. Because we're individuals and we're personal, we have personal preferences. So the supreme individual and supreme person, Purushottam Radharaman, he generally gives that betel to Radharani. And then he gives that betel to Radharani's dear ones. And the dear ones of Radharani, of course, are Sakya Mantris, Nitya Parishads, and the Pujaris. And many of them, in Vrindavan at least, especially, pujaris are very much in Sakhi Bhav, in the Goswami temple. So they, They don't even ask for it because they clear the plate. And okay, this is for me. Oh yeah, yatris, here's some puri, here's some sabji, but this is for me. So now this is a little bit of dilemma. So we don't say, no, bait on that. Prabhupada said, no, we don't eat. You know, we make a big UN cry, and if someone gives it to us, and the Pujari is looking at us and say, well, this guy's a crackpot, you know. So we take it, we accept it, and then we don't eat it because, you know, our scriptures are telling us that we shouldn't eat betel nut, that it's a mild intoxicant, extremely mild. It's kind of a digestive aid, but it's some type of intoxicant, the betel nut and the betel leaf that it's wrapped in, the pond leaf. And our scriptures are telling us, our gurus telling us not to eat it, although other Vaishnavas, Nimbarkis and Vallabhas, there's no stricture on them eating this tambal or betel. They're allowed to eat it, and they eat it with great relish from the Thakurji and from the Panwaller. They don't forget about the Mahaprasad. They get it and eat it. So if someone offers it, we gladly accept it because we're accepting not so much the item but the love behind it. And that's what bhakti is all about. It's not what you do or what you receive. It's how you do it and what's behind it. What's the backing? What's the position of your heart and mind when you do the activities you do? Everyone's chanting Hare Krishna, but what is the position of the heart and mind when we're chanting Hare Krishna? One is absorbed in the Prem Seva, Radharani and Govinda Yugo, and the other is just the other person chanting is fighting with his anarthas and fighting with his ego and everything else. So there's different quality of devotional expressions depending on the purity of the heart. What we would do as Gaudiya's followers of Srila Prabhupada, we would accept it happily and gladly, that knowing that this is Krishna's expression of Krishna's direct love, acceptance, recognition, praise, whatever, and touch this Mahaprasad, any Mahaprasad, especially tambal, betel nut, touch to our forehead, touch to our heart, say thank you, whatever, put in our pocket. And then we meet some good bhakta coming to the temple, coming to that very temple, and say, oh, excuse me, Prabhu, would you like some Mahaprasad? Oh, yes! And as soon as you show that tambal, it's in his mouth, he says, thank you, thank you. And so the vibration goes on, the acceptance, the love, the approval, it goes on in the parampara, from Radharaman to us to the next person, and everything's a smooth flow and transition of an exchange of love, premdara, current of love. But then we block that flow with, no, we don't need betel nut. What is this? How can you offer this? Hey, how can you? Don't you know? Gaudiya Vaishnavas don't need betel. Well, this, everything is should be balanced. We accept it, or even we accept some sweet or any type of Mahaprasad, we put it in a teli or a polythene plastic bag, put it in our pocket, then we walk down, we touch it to our forehead, we honor it, then we see a little kid, and say, hey, little kid, Mahaprasad, and then make him happy. And you give it to him, or give it to a cow, or save it. Often happens to us is that during Chaturmasya, different devotees come from Jagannath Puri, and bring like big bag of Jagannath Mahaprasadam. So I take a little bit, honor it, pay obeisances, offer some prayers, circumambulate it, as Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Param Guru would do. Then take a little bit and then stash the rest. I mean, secure the rest, save it for later. And I'm cleaning here or there and I find this big tiff and I say, oh, look at this. And it's not Chaturmasya. And there's no rules now. So Haribo. So we have a big feast of Mahaprasad. It's nice. So I wanted to just recap on that, about how the different ways of accepting the Mahaprasad and not incurring any offense from our side, at the same time seeing the variety of ways to reciprocate with Krishna's offering of Mahaprasad by touching it, by mentally respecting it, taking a little bit, taking only a tulsi leaf, saving it for later, redistributing it to someone else. Is it clear? I think it's kind of common sense. But if it wasn't, then maybe it is now. This is next text, the first division of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We're still discussing Sadhana Bhakti, Chapter 2, coming towards the end, and we'll be starting to touch a little bit on Ragatmika Bhakti, then Raganuga Bhakti, as it's briefly summarized in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is This is text 257, 258. I can read that. Proktena lakshanenaiva bhaktir adi kritasya cha angatve sunirashtepi nityad yakila karamanam yanasyad yatmikasyapi vairagyasya cha falguna spashtartam punarapi tad evedam nirakritam. The daily and periodic duties of Varnashram and the followers of Gyan, impersonal Gyan, have already been rejected as angas of bhakti. In other words, all the different duties that one does every day or even periodically, like pinda and shraddha and other activities one does in the Varnashram Dharma system, and the rules and rituals of Gyan, impersonal Gyan, they're not bhakti, they're not limbs of bhakti. And this, they've been rejected by using the basic definition of uttam bhakti. However, in order to make a point clear, the false type of vairagya has been again rejected as an anga bhakti. So here, again, drilling the same point, Rupa Goswami is using again this term phagal vairagya, saying that all these different types of vairagya and fasting and penances which aren't connected to Krishna and aren't meant for the direct pleasure of Krishna are not bhakti and therefore a waste of time and not required to perform. And this is the next verse, 259. Dana shishyadi bir dwayer yabhakti rupapadyate viduratvad uttamata hanyatasyas chanangata. That devotion or bhakti which is accomplished by dependence on wealth, followers, and other objects cannot be considered as an anga of uttam bhakti because it destroys the pure nature of that bhakti. It is situated far away from uttam bhakti. It's a very interesting concept. It applies especially to wealthy Indians. There's another translation. Bhakti that is caused or accomplished or performed through the medium of the assistance of wealth, disciples, and others, or they are made an expedient, causes lapses due to the intervening distance, has been denied as an anga bhakti. And Vishnu Chakravarti, he takes this verse to imply that one doesn't need any wealth. You don't need wealth and a bunch of disciples to engage in devotion. It's a personal matter. It's an independent matter. And the poorest of persons can hear and chant about the Lord. Don't need a lot of money to do bhakti. You need a lot of surrender and dedication. He takes it that way. And then there's another example that's given. It says, in spiritual circles, people do things they never would do in the material world. That's a very interesting analogy that's given in this verse. In other words, let's go through it a little bit slower. In the practice of bhakti or devotional service, there are things that devotees do that they would never, that materialists or non-devotees would never do. And here's an example. If you have a lover, a man has a lady he loves, or a lady has a man she loves, in the material world, would you send a representative to meet her? I'm sorry, I can't be with you tonight, so I'm sending my friend to be with you. We laugh. We say, well, this is ridiculous. Now let's see where the analogy goes. So similarly, would you build a temple and then install a deity and then hire a pujari to do puja and then say it's my temple? So Rupa Goswami saw this tendency 500 years ago. Because kings would do that. Bharatpur kings or Jaipur kings build a big temple. Rupa Goswami is saying this is not really an anga or limb of uttam bhakti, pure bhakti. Or the other example is that you have... because what Rupa Goswami is trying to imply or what he's saying here is that bhakti is personal. It's love. Bhakti means an expression of love. Priti, prema, love. That you, when you, if you have a lover, it's you are the lover, because you're showing to that person or displaying different acts or exhibitions of love. You're serving that person in varieties of way, speaking, glorifying them, buying things for them, being with them, talking with them, going places. You're doing things together. It's personal. You and your beloved. That's obvious. In devotion, it's you and your deity. It's not like, oh Prabhu, you know, I'm going away for China for the weekend for business. Here's my bead bag. Will you chant my rounds for me? I'll be a little busy. Can you stick your hand in my bead bag and chant my rounds and my beads with your hand? It sounds ludicrous, and it is. Prabhupada often said that bhakti is common sense, but some people don't have common sense. Same thing with the murti. If someone has a deity, then that, for example, what I've heard one acharya say, that the guru establishes a temple or establishes a deity, he has his own deities, then he tells his disciples, okay, you do all the puja, and then he sits back and watches a cricket match or whatever. Well, not that, but that's a little bit over the top. But he lets all the disciples do all the puja, and he doesn't personally do any puja. This is considered an infraction by the acharya or the guru, that he doesn't do it. He just engages disciples or engages others in the puja. In other words, it's not the purest expression of bhakti, because bhakti is God is an individual person, and we are individual devotees. And we should express personally through our hand. Krishna wants to eat from our hand, and he wants to receive the agarbhati from our hand. This concept to engage someone else in doing puja or worship, your disciples, is not really acceptable as pure devotion. These are your deities, and you should do the puja. There are certain extenuating circumstances when you may not be able to do the puja. You're living in India, worshipping Shaligram or Giriraj, and you have to go to your country or visa or whatever reason. So then you don't want to discomfort your deities by taking them out of the holy dham. So then you ask a qualified god brother or god sister, will you please look after my deities on my behalf and worship, because I don't want to... Because then it's uttam bhakti, because you're tracing out the comfort and pleasure of the deities over their discomfort of going through x-ray and maybe getting confiscated or quarantined or handled by some meat eaters in the customs and leaving the holy dham. And Giriraj doesn't really like to leave the holy dham, it is said. So that therefore that you're doing anukulya, Krishna anukulya, by leaving them there. We see even Prabhupada, when he would go around the world, he would offer the arti to the deities. You see Krishna Balaram, when he opened the temple, he's personally offering the arti. Even at an advanced age, he was waving the chamara and everything, doing arti. And in those days, when they first opened the temple in 74, the Artik paraphernalia is very heavy, very big, really big. So this is a point that Rupa Goswami saw this tendency to let other people do the puja for me. Or in the same way, we should, as much as possible, we should personally do our deity worship. Because the whole section here is discussing the worship of Krishna and the engaging in his service. And he says that when you engage others or wealth, then it can be a lapse. It can be considered a type of falgo, a type of imbalance, or a lapse in the proper execution of pure devotion. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he was one time meeting with some of his leading disciples in the beginning of the movement of the Gaudiya Math, and he was a little bit almost like crying, and he said that, you know, he said, please forgive me. He called all of his disciples. He addressed them as Prabhu. He said, Prabhus, please forgive me, because I'm engaging you in all these services in the temple, Gaudiya Math, to maintain this huge establishment, puja and cooking. But actually, I feel that all these services are my services, that I should be washing the pots, and I should be cutting the vegetables, and I should be sweeping the floor, and I should be offering the arti, and I should be cleaning the toilets, and I should be doing all these things. But there's so many services that I can't do them all. As one person, I'm incapable of doing all these services myself. So I'm asking your assistance, and I'm asking you to help me perform all these services, because I've taken on all these services for the pleasure of Gandharvika Giridhari, but I'm incapable of doing them all alone, so I depend on your cooperation and your loving cooperation. So I feel, and don't feel that you're doing these services, I feel I'm responsible that all these services, they're actually my services. And I should do all these services, but I'm somewhat limited, so you're all helping me for the pleasure. Very beautiful, touching, genuine statement and feelings of the Acharya, of the Guru, of the establishment, Gaudiya Math, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So in this case, this is the extreme example of personally involved and personally taking personal responsibility for every service in the temple, not just the deity service or, well, it's my responsibility to give class every day. I'm the sannyasi or I'm the acharya, so I sit on the asana and speak for an hour every day. Well, what about washing the pots? What about cleaning the toilets? What about sweeping the floor? Oh, that's your responsibility. But he didn't feel like that. He felt, of course, probably he was mainly giving the class, I would assume. He was giving the pravachan every day. And maybe doing puja. This is a very nice example he set to exemplify this principle of bhakti, this uttam bhakti, that the devotee should personally engage in the limbs of devotion, not engage someone else's wealth in it. That, like for preaching, like the Guru says, you should go out and distribute books. I want you to go out and distribute Bhagavad Gita. And you say, yes, Guruji, I'll do that. And then you call up some rich people and say, Guruji wants lots of Bhagavad Gitas distributed. So why don't you come and buy 10,000? So then you call five or six industrialists and they come to the temple, they each buy 10,000 Gitas. And then you tell them, you go to the you take the money and the check, and you say, you go to the godown and the book in charge, he'll give you the books. And you just sit and eat Mahal Prasad and have a nice time in the temple. And you don't actually go on book distribution. But by your clever arrangement, you distributed 50,000 books through the wealth and hands of some others. And yourself, you didn't distribute one book, really. I didn't go out to meet any conditioned souls or convince them about the necessity of taking up Krishna consciousness. And Guruji says, so how was your book distribution? Oh, Guruji, very big, very big. I distributed 50,000 books. Acha. In one day. Yes, yes, yes. I work so hard. The Guru may appreciate your cleverness, but and that so many books went out somewhere, somehow, some way. But he may say, no, that's not exactly what I meant. I meant that you should personally go out and preach and distribute the books. And you can do both. How long did it take you to distribute those 50,000 books? Oh, that was a couple hours. Acha. And what did you do the rest of the week? Well, I did so many books, I thought I could take it easy. So this is maybe some idea, similar line that Rupa Goswami is saying. And this is text 260. Vishesh anatvam evaisham samshrayant yadikarinam vivekadin yato misham apinangatvam uchite. Discrimination and other material qualities cannot be considered as angas of uttam bhakti, since on their own they take shelter of the excellent condition of the persons practicing uttam bhakti, Vishnu says. Discernment and other qualities take shelter of the excellent condition of the devotees. Thus, determination and other qualities should not be considered angas. Let's see. The conscious power of discrimination or knowledge that distinguishes good from bad, or soul or spirit from matter, though completely accommodates the various distinctive traits of different stages of spiritual practices, by those who are eligible in the way of bhakti, it cannot be accepted as an anga of uttam bhakti. The whole discussion here over so many verses is a analysis or comparison of gyan, karma, and bhakti. And Rupa Goswami is still riding with these concepts. Sometimes I'm talking about some limbs of karma or gyan. Mostly he's speaking about different aspects of karma and gyan, and then how it how it's similar to or different from or related to or unrelated to bhakti, uttam bhakti. And uttam bhakti is that which is favorable for the pleasure and happiness of Krishna, done with a positive mind and a surrendered heart. This is the uttam bhakti, free from any desire for personal gain or any covering of karma gyan. So here, this is this whole idea about vivek. So the word is there is vivek. Vivek means discrimination. Vivek adi. Beginning with vivek. Adikar. It's not. He says that there's something very special. Vishesh means unique or special about bhakti. Whereas in gyan and gyan marg, vivek is one of the aspects of gyan. It's a very important discrimination, intellectual discrimination. Through study of various aphorisms and sutras of Vedanta, one learns to discriminate. It's called, you must have heard the term, neti-neti. Have you heard this? Neti-neti. N-E-T-I. Not this, not that, not this, not this, not this. So that's where one is employing vivek, discrimination. This is Brahman, this is not. This is Brahman, this is not. This is in the beginning. Ultimately, it's all Brahman. Sarvam kalvidam Brahma. But in the beginning, for example, the Mayavadis, we have down here in Vrindavan, Akhandanandan Ashram, and further down near Fogel Ashram, up the street, there's Akhandanandan Library, and the Akhandanandan Ashram and Temple, where there's Nritya Gopal Murti. It's one Murti, marble Murti of Gopal. It was installed by Akhandanandanji. It's a very famous personality of Vrindavan, although he's a big Mayavadi. He's a very, very famous scholar and pundit who, Vrindavan is full of famous people, most of them Vaishnavas, but even a few Mayavadis. He did a lot of charity work also, became famous by that. But he has a deity there, and the followers of the Mayavad school, or Gyan Marg, impersonal Gyan, they often worship a deity in the beginning. It's difficult to meditate on the formless Brahman, since our whole chitta, our whole consciousness is full of rupam. It's full of form since time immemorial. So suddenly you meet some guru, a jnani guru, and you want to follow the nirvishesh path of Mayavad. He says, okay, now meditate on formless Brahman. As soon as you close your eyes, you'll see your mother, you'll see some form, wife, husband, whatever. Dog, cat, mountain, anything. You'll see some form. Because they're ingrained, they're embedded in the chitta and the consciousness. So they have to be effaced, they have to be erased from the consciousness. You can imagine you have a blackboard, you're in school, and they have this chalk and they have some slate or some what we call blackboard. And they write on it and they erase it. And then as soon as the teacher erases it, then something else appears on the blackboard. He erases it and comes up. Hey, what is this? Every time I erase that, what I've written, something new comes up on the blackboard. Now this is the chitta, the surface of the chitta has so many millions and millions of forms embedded in it. It's very difficult to simply sit down, do a little pranayama and meditate in personal Brahman. So therefore they say, they give all types of form meditation, rupdhyan. Meditate on the navel, meditate on the tip of your nose. And in Akhandanandan's case, in many other cases, they have murti. Even they have arartik and because they maybe have some scars or bhakti from previous pursuits or whatever. They offer some artik, and then they meditate on the deity. And then they meditate until they realize the non-difference between the deity and themselves. And deity's Brahman is not marble, it's not a form, there's no form there. Then they throw the deity in the river. In this case, he's still there. Because he's, Gopal, he's Vrindavan, he never takes a step out of Vrindavan. So they can't get rid of them. Or maybe they don't want to because the new recruits will be still meditating like that. But the old ones will stop coming for the puja and meditation. So therefore, vivek is something, it's one of the integral practices in the Gyan Marg, vivek. If someone, knowing that, scholars of bhakti or Brahmins that take up the bhakti marg, they may think, oh, now I'm in the bhakti marg, vivek or discrimination, this must also be a limb of bhakti. Oh, except because it even sounds like that. We Because there is some discrimination in bhakti. We say, Anukalyasya Sankalpa, Pratikalyasya Varjanam. There are six symptoms of surrender which are given in the same book. Anukalyasya Sankalpa, Pratikalyasya Varjanam. I think everyone knows what that means. We should accept everything which is favorable for Krishna consciousness, right? Sankalpa, and reject Pratikul. Pratikalyasya Varjanam means to reject. Reject everything that's against Pratikul. Against Krishna consciousness. Well, that's discrimination. I have to exercise discrimination. Or, we're told to avoid non-devotees, the Madhya Madhikari, avoid the atheists, and make friends with devotees, serve those above us, and preach to the, this is the four discriminations of the Madhyam, and preach to the innocent. Everyone knows this also. These are the characteristics of the Madhya Madhikari. So that's vivek of a sort. But, that vivek, in one sense, it's Krishna consciousness, because you have to accept. But it's not the kind of vivek that Rupa Goswami is referring to. He's referring to this vivek in terms of Brahman, that and Gyanmarg, this discrimination in 18.8. This is Brahman, that's not Brahman. And coming to the Bhakti Marg and saying, oh, vivek must be a crucial, must be actually, this must be actually bhakti. That the practice of doing vivek, accepting this thing as favorable and rejecting that thing. Even that's not bhakti. For example, we say, asat sanga tyag e vaishnavachar. So we're making discrimination. We're exercising vivek. This person is asat sanga. This stri sanga or abhakta or vishayi. So we reject. So that's vivek. We reject and we accept devotees. But that activity of rejecting or accepting, that itself is not bhakti. Do you follow? It's not a limb of bhakti. It's not shravanam kirtan vishnu. That is helpful to become established or to begin or to execute the practices of bhakti. Because if you remove all the negative factors, then there's a chance you can do something positive. For example, if you have a field and it's full of trees and full of boulders and rocks, and you want to grow crops there or grow some wheat there, it's a little bit impossible in a field covered with rocks and boulders and trees. You remove all the trees and you clear all the rocks and you clear all the soil, well, that field, that's not growing anything. That's not producing any crops, but it's preparatory. You follow? And you put in the seeds, then you grow the crops, and then you get the positive production, the yield of the crops. The same way. So this vivek is not really a limb of bhakti. That's really what he's saying. But tomorrow we can do the next verse, 261.